yesterday. He said something, and like he said, you know, fuck. And I'm like, oh, nice. How can you're so lazy with your speech? okay, everybody, we're doing the show. It's another Dan Duran pre-birthday show.
I'm not here.
We were just talking about the cargo ship that hit the bridge in Baltimore. That's crazy. The video of it, it's just wild.
I think they're still looking for seven people. And I, you know, like at this point, it's probably, how warm could it possibly be in Baltimore?
What do you mean, do you mean they're still looking for it? Have they narrowed it down to the water?
Yeah, they're looking in the water.
Oh, okay. It's not like they're putting up
sonars and the, whatever they got. They're looking for people.
Yeah, it's not like they're putting up posters all around town. Have you seen these people? Last seen on the bridge before it collapsed.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's make fun of tragedy. Yeah, let's. Why don't we get back to Kate like we did last week?
That's hilarious. Yeah, let's make fun of tragedy. Do you know there was a time on this show where our producer at the time was Danger Boy, and we took such glee in any time somebody of note would die because we had a somebody of note would die song.
Yes.
Mother Teresa,
you have died.
No, but you know how these things, right now it's search, it's not recovery. This is the way they're handling it. So they're searching for survivors, but it won't take long for that to turn into recovery. This is the, these are the terms they use.
Listen, there's no doubt that it's a sad moment for humanity. I mean, but it is one of those things where the video of what we're talking about, it's a cargo ship that runs into this bridge, and the shot, I saw a couple different views of it, but the long shot of the whole bridge as it starts, it almost seems, again, Dan, you're in the movies, it almost seems like it's a movie effect.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's slow motion collapse. It's like, because it hits one of the support. There's two huge support things for that bridge, and it just runs right in. What's the guy? The pilot of the ship? What are they like? How could they possibly even do that? That's not. It's a major port. There's all kinds
of
problem.
If the guy's a pilot, what was he doing driving his ship?
Great point. That's right. They should have got a boat driver.
Right.
Do you think it, when it's because, you know, here's the thing. The company that owns the, what's it called? The cargo ship. That company, they're already, there's lawsuits already starting. It's America. But what if it turns out that the ship driver was like a trainee? Because it was like it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. So maybe it was one of those things where like, okay, well, Let's Lenny's turn. Let's give him a shot. You know, he's got to learn. He's got to learn sometime.
Oh yeah, this will be a good test. See that bridge coming up? Oh yeah, take her through there. Just take her through there. And it was, it looked like full on, like right in the middle. Bang! It was weird.
Instead of going right through the middle of the two, it's a big, huge bridge. There was a good space there not to hit it, but yeah. Anyway.
Maybe he misunderstood the instructions. No, but Siri, maybe he didn't understand that you were supposed to go between the abutments.
Yeah.
Well, remember years ago, a couple of decades now, maybe more, happened down in Tampa Bay, hit the Sunshine Skyway or whatever. And that was such an ordeal at the time for that. Because, again, so many cars use those access points. And how long does it take to rebuild that? Like, it won't be back. It won't be functioning tomorrow. It'll be a long time. Well, and they'll probably want to update the bridge. So Baltimore's going to be turned upside down for a while.
Two things I thought. One was again, it's tragic. Obviously, we're not complete assholes. It's tragic. But also stunning in its, you know, scope. You're like, wow, that's an entire bridge coming down. The second thing I worry about, though, is I just hope there's not a bunch of copycat, you know, bridge, because you find out how, it's not that hard to take out a bridge. You just have to cargo ship it into the thing.
It's already on Fox News. The Democrats did it.
Oh yeah, Joe Biden. Yeah, Joe Biden was Hunter? Yeah. Was it Hunter? I know it was Hunter Biden's laptop that was driving the ship.
Right. This is a good time for a conspiracy theory startup, though. If you've got a conspiracy theory floating around, theory floating around in your brain, this is a good time to, because it's early moments.
Yeah,
It's ready to go. It's blank canvas. On
well,
the
I, what time is it? It's we're recording at 8:05 Eastern time. I guarantee you at some point today, it'll be the Jews problem. It'll be because of the Jews.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the Jews. The Jews.
The Jews.
I would, I think, just because over the weekend I felt bad, honestly, and we all should. You know, that whole Kate Middleton and Prince William pegging thing and suggesting he had a chick on the side now and was nailing her with a peg and stuff. And then it turns out the poor woman has been diagnosed with cancer and, you know, that's why she was out of the limelight. And I felt bad. I thought, you know, here we are guffawing and carrying on like children with the pegging thing and those people are going through that. So I would just like to, you know, I would just like everyone to know that we are aware of that. And what can you say?
Well, to be clear, you misspoke slightly. He wasn't pegging what? Her. The rumor was that she was pegging. Yeah, she was the. I'm sorry. He was the yes. peg. He was the peggy. She was the pegger. But apparently,
sometimes in the charge to a laugh, you forget about. I don't know what's the word, but that's all it was.
So is this your pegging apology then?
This is a peg apology. You know, I think what would surprise a lot of people is that we think this program is a comedy-based one.
That's right. That's the first mistake.
that might come as a surprise. But this program does have some professionalism, and that is birthday boy Dan Duran as our studio announcer, and let's begin.
This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Puerto Aventuras, Mexico, and from our well-equipped Dominican Republic facility with Muskoka chairs on a sandy ocean beachfront, and from Peterborough at Lisa's dining room table next to trendy black sticks in a vase. I'm Dan Duran, your studio announcer, broadcasting live from the, insert your name here, Zoom Theater, and brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. And now here are two men who are going on a hunger strike until Trump lies again. It's the Humble and Fred.
Very good, Dan Duran. And the countdown to Dan Duran's birthday. I'm very excited to welcome back one of my colleagues in the medical industry. Actually, a former sponsor of this program, Dr. Alkesh Patel, will be with us from Ringside Family Health Group in Burlington. A lot of stuff going on in Ontario vis-a-vis the doctors. And we're going to talk to Alkesh today about that. It's a big issue. We'll explain it when he gets here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it affects everyone. And going forward even more, obviously.
With the family doctor experience?
Well, part of it is based on the fact that more family doctors in Ontario than ever before are planning to quit in the next 5 years. It's hard. The point is, it's already hard to get a physician, a family doctor in Ontario. It's going to get harder in the next half a decade. And Alkesh has got something. He's drafted something called the Family Doctor's Pledge, and he's going to explain what that is.
Yeah, you know, it's people would probably be surprised at what doctors earn nowadays. I know the old system, I don't know if it's changed. We can ask them, you know, where they weren't allowed to incorporate. They literally had to make money and pay their staff and everything. What they end up with is somewhat shocking considering, you know, the service they provide the public, the education they have, I mean, compared to other things. Yeah, and it's driving them, you know, if not out of the profession, out of the country. And I don't know what the government's going to do.
Yeah, GPs aren't making a lot. I mean, general no. practitioners don't make what you'd think a doctor would make or should make.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the, I was just going to say a lot of the the things that the doctors have to invest in is paperwork. The bureaucracy of the system is substantial.
Listen, Dan, that's what drove me out of the profession. That's what drove me out of the profession and into Mexico. You know, I just when I practice down here, there's a lot less paperwork. And my overhead is very, very low.
Hey, you guys notice I changed my studio look here down in the Dominican, eh? My background. And I'll just explain why. See that door behind me?
Yeah.
That's into the bathroom. And when Dahl was here with me in the morning, she'd be going in and out of there. So I had to position the camera so that you couldn't see sweet Dahl in and out of the bathroom, you know, in the morning. So now that she's gone, I can change the look. Are you glad to know that? People might wonder why I've changed the look. They might. You never know.
Well, now that you and Doug are bumming each other, I guess we're going to see Doug coming in and out of the bathroom.
Best peg I've ever had.
That's right.
In the Dominican.
That's right. After being lifelong friends for 60 years, one day Doug just said, you know what, Fred? I'd like to peg that sweet pink butt of yours.
We've just had the best meal we've ever had. Oh,
no,
let's do this.
Dan, I was going to tell you, what you should change the intro to is, you know, Howard from Puerto Aventuras and you from Lisa's and Fred from Cabaretti, food jewel of the Caribbean. Because yesterday after the fucking show, he and I are just shooting the shit as we often do. And he starts calling, the best meal I've ever had, the best Italian meal I've ever had. It was the best Italian in Cabaretti. And I was like, God damn it, man.
Okay, here's what I actually said. I said I had one of the best pizzas ever.
Oh, right. It was pizza this time.
It was pizza. It was thin crust pizza. And the pizza was thin crust, but it was soft and delicious. And I had, like, spicy sausage and gorgonzola cheese on it. Like, I didn't load it down with a bunch of stuff, just the spicy cheese and the gorgonzola. And, of course, it had some mozzarella. And just the balance of spice and gorgonzola. Not everybody likes that style of cheese, but I do. This pizza was outstanding. I'm sorry. It's just, I've had so many taste treats down here.
Don't apologize, but could you get back and, I think it was more interesting when you described why you changed your background.
Yeah.
Could you do that part again?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
let's review. He's had the best sushi. The volcano, or whatever it's called. Now Godzilla. He's had the best pizza, the Godzilla.
Delicious.
he's had the best Italian.
Best pasta.
Carbonara. There's this thing down here called chorizo steak or whatever.
Chorizo.
It's good. Chorizo.
You know, as often happens on the program, we both are of a similar mind. I have eaten a lot of chorizo sausage down here. I love it. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I was aware of it, but I never really tried it much when I'm in Toronto, but I've had it. I'll buy it. In fact, I made it one day. Did I not make you a little chorizo?
Yeah, no, it had a little chorizo experience going on.
I made a little, some tortillas and some tacos actually for Dan and I with egg, chorizo and rice. Chorizo is really it's going to be part of my life from now on.
Well, I'm not sure we're talking about the same thing, because what I'm talking about is flattened steak, almost like a skirt steak, flattened right out and quite long and then grilled quickly.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's chorizo, you know.
Maybe it's not.
I'm not good with those names and stuff, you know what I mean? I just call it that. I did not have
the best meal. I've had the best Mexican food I've ever had at the place I took you down. That by far is the best Mexican food. But yesterday, I had that, what do they call it, a flat steak, or what did you call it, Freddie?
Skirt steak.
Skirt steak. So my little place right here, it's called the Trade Winds, and it's sort of a little restaurant bar where all the crews from the little excursions come and eat at the end of the day. And the food is super cheap, but it's really, really good. And last night, their special was skirt steak fajitas with frijoles and rice. And then I got pico de gallo, which is just, you know, chopped up onion and tomato. And all of that, plus a little fake beer, all of it was 150 pesos. So the point is, it's not the great, and it was great. It was fine. But it was for, you know, 12 bucks, including tip.
Yeah.
I got an entire meal. It was really, really good.
Well, last night, Dougie, Dougie. He made his.
Is that what you say when you're in the moment of heat?
Nice one, Dan Duran. Is that what you and Dougie? No.
Oh, Dougie.
Oh, Dougie. Oh, no.
Dougie.
No.
Anyway,
pull out.
Easier, Dougie. Easy, Dougie. No. He made his special spaghetti again last night, and he kept apologizing that a couple of ingredients were missing.
No, no.
But it was so good. He's got that down.
But it's it was good. But was it Cabaretti Food Jewel of the Caribbean good?
Close. I mean, it's not even in the same category, right? Because right. He could do this anywhere in the world.
Dan, would you please add Cabaretti Food Jewel of the Caribbean to the intro, please? Thank you.
Right, yeah. Cabaretti.
Cabaretti. Food Jewel of the Caribbean.
And I think I've told you, just down the beach here, there's a place called Kahuna, and they have this chicken sandwich that I've had Christ. It like 3 or 4 times.
So we list that off the list. Sorry. The
chicken sandwich. Thick, juicy breast with just a little tiny bit of buffalo breading on it. And I don't like anything breaded, but I tried this thing one day, and I've been back for more. And then I put some blue cheese dressing on top of it. It's outstanding.
You should start a new podcast. And when you come back to the Toronto area, the GTA, you should be a food reviewer. And it would always be, you know, comparing the food here to the food where you are right now in Cabaretti.
Yeah, but he would have to leave his house to go and review food.
Oh, right.
So it would just be reviewing food that Dahl made.
And skip the dishes, maybe bring in, skip right. it, you know.
Well, and I'll say, you know, I'm not a super world traveler, but I've been a lot of places. And as far as enjoying food, I can't think of anywhere that I've enjoyed the food more.
Serious question, though. Even you, and you are, you know, doing our little aging with energy show, you've gone to a lot of places. You've been to a lot of places. I have not. But one of the places we've been to together is San Miguel de Allende, where both of us were last Christmas, winter. And that food, that's a food, a foodie's kind of paradise. There's hundreds of restaurants and world class as well. And you're saying that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. And again, I just, that was outstanding too, some of the restaurants there. And, you know, this is fresh, you know, this is fresh on my mind. I'm experiencing it now. And maybe last year I was talking about the food there. But, you know, there's some fantastic restaurants in San Miguel, of course. Remember Pork Belly?
Oh, my God.
Remember that? What was it? Was it the broccoli? The fried broccoli or something they had?
No, it was.
It was amazing. What was that? Oh, cauliflower.
Cauliflower, yeah.
Cauliflower, that, yeah, man.
Yeah, we had several meals there that were Cabaretti, Food Jewel of the Caribbean worthy.
Yeah, that was roasted cauliflower with like a sauce on it. Fuck, it was outstanding.
Isn't it cauliflower, not cauliflower?
Yeah, he says cauliflower. Don't question. Okay. He's got a bit of an accent.
Is it possible that you're being next to the fine sea air and the salt and the elevation, you know, at sea level? Have your taste buds blossomed in some way that you're now experiencing food with more of a?
I don't know.
You know,
I don't know.
Okay.
That you know what? Valid. I don't.
I've never heard you be so expressive about food.
No, I have. You haven't been paying attention. I have. This is, you know what, it's not new for me. Let's switch gears. If we can, let's switch gears. A couple stories I wanted to get out. One of them is this is pretty recent. The CEO of Boeing is stepping down amid a series of problems, not the least of which one of the doors of their planes just, you know, magically disappeared. He's a guy named Dave Calhoun has agreed to step down by the end of the year. Is this story, the safety issues have led to production bottleneck. That little incident, this just shows you how cause and effect in the real world is. Boeing's, since the door blowout, that was January. That's only a couple months ago. Boeing's stock has plummeted 23%. And there's another story that goes with this, but just I'll let you comment on that if you have a comment. But it's pretty amazing to me as just an observer of the world that incident, which most people would understand. You know, it's so rare that aviation accidents happen now. When the three of us were younger, two things happened that you almost never hear about. Hijackings.
Yeah.
A lot of hijackings in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, yeah. And a lot more aviation incidents. Now it's so rare. That's maybe why that incident in January had such an effect on their stock.
Yeah. Most of the incidents now are just assholes losing their temper or something over a seat or something, you notice. But they're having not a problem now, but a lot of people getting on Boeing jets are asking the flight crew to check the door.
Are they really?
Especially, you know, I was reading the other day, like, people with families and everything, they're going up to the flight crew and saying, okay, that door now, is it okay? Is it secured properly? Are we going to be all right?
Well, you can't even see that door. That door is a plug that fell out. You wouldn't really be able to tell.
Yeah, but you know how stories go. Every door on the plane now is going to blow out. And why wouldn't they?
I love when you're sitting in the exit row and the stewardess comes over and very seriously is like, okay, listen, in the case of an incident, do you feel qualified to open the exit door and help everyone? I'm like, fuck, all of a sudden I'm in charge of flight safety. You know, and has anyone ever said no? Because we all want the exit row for the extra leg room. Has there anyone ever said, you know what? On second thought, put me in the back where the fucking seat doesn't go down, because I don't feel qualified to work this door mid tragedy.
Yeah, or I'll take that on for a voucher. Thank you for a free flight.
Well, that's right.
How about that?
Let me get this straight. Let me get this straight. You're briefing me in the case of an emergency. Here's the thing I'm doing. I'm getting that door open and I'm getting the hell out of here. By the way, little fun aviation fact. Every time that door opens and the, what do they call that? The slide gets inflated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a $30,000 ticket. It costs 30 grand. If to open that, to get the slide inflated, because I guess they have to repack it and buy another one, whatever. I just can imagine somebody's like, we shouldn't open it. If the plane, the fucking thing's on fire, but don't open it because it's too expensive.
There's been a lot of things going wrong at Boeing. But one of the things that the media these days exposes is now that Boeing's kind of on the radar, any kind of something that goes on a Boeing plane will get the exposure that it never used to, like some little tiny thing happens but it gets getting the exposure. I mean, parts falling off the plane, like a wheel and a hatch, that'll get, that's valid. But the lesser stuff, of a quick landing because of something or other, they had to turn around for something, just that's getting exposure as well now.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
For Boeing.
So the other story I wanted to couple this with, so the Boeing CEO guy, his name is Dave Calhoun, as I mentioned. So he's stepping down. The stock price has lost 23%. But I guarantee you, his compensation package will be stunning. How do I know that? The CEO of Shopify is a guy named Toby Lütke. And, Shopify, of course, a Canadian company, an e-commerce giant. Shares have jumped. On the other hand, their shares have jumped sharply over the past years. Here's how different their worlds are than ours. The CEO of Shopify, his package of compensation was $200 million. That's per year. That's what he's getting this year to be the CEO of that company.
Wow. So how much are they making? Isn't that something?
The weird thing about the Boeing CEO is that he's, all right, guys, I'm leaving, whatever, because of all these problems. But he's leaving 9 months. That's 9 months, nine-month exit. That's kind of weird. It's, that's not right.
And I'm sure it has something to do with boards of directors and, finding a transitional blah, blah, blah. But I promise you, he's leaving with a huge compensation package like yourself. But $200 million, that's how much the CEO of Shopify, his compensation last year was.
Yeah. And I wonder if, you know, because John, we heard the story last week that Dan, his compensation package from the radio station in Peterborough, he went back to John Paul and said, John, can you do a little better? And to his credit, he did, right, Dan?
That's correct, yes.
Now, I wonder if the guy from, you know, Boeing or whatever, or Shopify, whatever, whether, you know, it's like, okay, here's your exit package, $180 million. Can you do a little better? Can you make that?
That's right, you know. I have children. I have children.
I have children.
You know.
Jesus. You can bet it happens. It's a cutthroat world out there, as you know. Speaking of which, I just have to mention this because I laugh at this stuff as it comes along. Were you finished, Howard?
I think so. I was going to do a bit about, you know, if you make $200 million a year, is that like, what is that, every 2 weeks? And then do you take, you know, do you have to pay, you know, a CPP, you know, that kind of crap.
I've become a bit of a cynic when it comes to world shortages. And I have this theory that everybody just takes their turn with a shortage and you can drive your price up and it never falls back to where it was. And it's because this one in particular for me, because at night with a cup of tea, I like a piece of dark chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
Right? I do.
Didn't know, describe it in some
couple
detail.
A couple of squares of dark chocolate with a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Well, they're saying cocoa now is going to go up 66%, or it's on its way to like a 2/3 increase in price because they're calling it incidents, supply incidents or whatever the new thing is in West Africa and Central America, where most of our cocoa comes from. So anything with cocoa in it, you're going to notice the price is going to explode over the next little while. And again, I can't help but be a cynic with this stuff. It honestly, I think it's like they take turns. It's like, okay, it's Coco's turn. Okay, now remember a couple of years ago or a few years ago, speaking of cauliflower, remember they had the cauliflower shortage and it was like $10 a head.
So you're thinking that it was done alphabetically, cauliflower and now cocoa?
maybe. But I'm a cynic that way, and well, it just seems to happen systematically. Have you not noticed that, guys?
Well, I'm not saying that. No, I don't agree with you, actually.
Okay.
I mean,
you're free.
The fact is, like any other conspiracy, or well, it's kind of a conspiracy. Who all got together? Where was the meeting where everyone? Okay, in 2019, it'll be cauliflower. Then 2024, cocoa, Europe. And then in 2025, there's going to be a lettuce shortage.
Wait a minute. There's cinnamon and coffee still.
Right.
In the seas.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, I can see why you're, you know, you might say, oh, this is interesting. But is it a conspiracy that they take turns? Oh, and I think that's a bit more.
Well, maybe it's not a conspiracy per se. It's, hey, everybody else is doing this. Why don't we create one? How about that? And if there is a meeting, it's in Galen Weston's office. You can bet your ass.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What's his? I wonder what that CEO compensation is. You know, there was a time, just to come back to that, when I mean, we've all seen these stories when 20, 30 years ago, the head of a company, their compensation was X number of times that of the average worker.
Yeah.
But it's so, the gulf has just gotten so much wider over the last 20 or 30 years that the CEO of Shopify is making hundreds of thousands of times more than the average worker at Shopify. Not that they're not doing well.
Right. Yeah.
That's one of those things.
Right. That's a great divide, I'll tell you, because that is true. Back in the day when, you know, there wasn't as much greed or bottom line consciousness, and
there was probably as much greed. It just wasn't, the gulf wasn't as big. And I was gonna say Shopify is one of those things where, you know, I remember hearing about it, you know, who are the people that heard about it and went, you know, maybe I'll invest some money in that.
Yeah.
You know,
I wonder if Fred's right, though. Does greed, does it become more popular? I mean, is greed trending at any point? Is greed better? I mean, I don't know. In the 80s, there was the whole greed thing with the Wall Street.
Greed is good. But, I don't think it's any different. And because, you know, in the evolutionary timeline of human beings, the last 30 or 40 years, whenever it used to be this and now it's this, human beings haven't changed that much.
So the instincts to be greedy and mine over yours and villages versus villages, that's baked into our DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably no answer to that, is there, actually? And that's a good explanation. What's changed? Maybe, greed hasn't changed. It's the access to it and the division between haves and have-nots.
My dad had a famous saying of the many things he used to say to me, but one was, you know, the rich get richer, and not in a cynical, shitty way. He was just sort of observing that. He'd say, you know, like, I would tell him about something, and he'd go, oh, you know, well, the rich get richer. And it's always been that way, except now the richer that they got is bigger than it used to be, because, I don't know, 20 years ago, there was a few billionaires. Now there's a lot of billionaires, a lot more than there ever was. The oligarchs and the fucking Bezos and all these people.
And remember, something that cannot be caught, forgotten through this, people that tend to get rich quick or become, you know, extremely wealthy, sometimes take chances and do things that the average person doesn't have the guts for. You know, and that's what it turns into. And probably for every story for a guy that invested in Shopify and become a multimillionaire, there's other people that invested in other companies and nothing happened, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, those are, by the way, those other people are me.
Yeah. But, you know, when I seriously, it's you know, whether it's taking a chance on opening a business, you know, most people, the vast majority of people, just don't have the stomach for it. So they become one of the workers as opposed to one of the rich people.
And there's also a lot of work. I mean, you know, again, socialists like Dan Duran of the, you know, Peterborough Communist Party. You know,
From the commune here.
From the commune. He lives in an organic commune.
Yeah.
You forget, like I've told the story about it. I emceed a bunch of stuff for Wendy's franchisees a few years ago. Years back, I hosted a golf tournament for them. And I remember having conversations with just everyday Canadians who had done just what you said, Freddie, taking the chance. Couple people I remember this distinctly were former school teachers making a nice living. The husband and wife school teacher, that's a nice income in Canada. But they decided they wanted to be their own bosses. They quit their school jobs. And when I met them, they had just added their second franchise. And I remember talking to them at one of these get-togethers. And he said the first franchise, him and his wife, for two and a half years, worked pretty much every hour of every day to get that thing up and running. And he said, we weren't good. Our goal is to get four or five. He said, because once you get to the second one, then you can start to ease off in that. My point being is your point. Not everyone wants to do that. Number one, take the chance. But I always think not everyone wants to work that hard because it's hard work.
Yeah. Well, was it with you or whatever? We sort of looked into Tim Hortons and they
It was you and I.
You got to be on site for the first 2 years.
Yeah, that's right. You can't
just invest and walk away.
It was you and me in Brampton. This was a long time ago, Dan, where I was out smoking on the balcony and we were talking, him and I, about, you know, how many Tim Hortons there were and weren't. And there was either there was one coming up for sale or we thought of a corner there. Dan, you're looking at two guys that could have been the Tim Hortons Barons of South Brampton.
You know, my cousin looked at an M&M meat shop, and he looked at the same thing, wanted to be his own boss, wanted eventually passive income. But when he looked at what you had to do from day one to, like, year five, it was like, no, that's going to be hell. I'm not doing it. He was just honest with himself.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's like the same thing with John Paul and that conversation about, you know, when we found a lot of people said, hey, Humble and Fred, you guys should buy a radio station. And we're like, we don't really like working.
Does it mean have to work?
We don't really. Wait a second. Can we go home at 11?
Don't you hire people to do the job? Can we go? Isn't that part of it?
Is it? Can we finish? Can I go golfing by 11? Because that's all I need to know. Yeah, we have a lot of energy, Fred and I, from about 5 a.m. until 11 a.m.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think to your point, Howard, about, you know, CEOs making the crazy amount of money and you know, whether or not the worker ratio is quite right the way it used to be, You know, they, I think business people should be rewarded for, you know, for taking the risk that, that Fred was talking about there. There's a point, though, where a corporation, a company, people in the company have so much influence that it's an outsized influence that takes over where the average person has influence in our society. And sometimes that gets to be a little bit much, like, you know, all the really rich people that we seem to know the name of, the richest people in the world, all those people, you know, there's some problems there with them controlling so much, from Gates to, you know, to Musk and all those guys. There's they have an outside influence, outsized influence on our society, and I'm not sure it's healthy.
I agree. I agree, but actually.
What do you do about it? That's the problem. How do you mandate a ceiling or something? Like, what do you do? You know what I mean? I mean, the system is what it is, and then these people took advantage of it, and now these it's created these monsters. What do you do?
The difference between a rich person 30 years ago, to Dan's point, if you were somebody that started a company, or you were Lee Iacocca, who ran a big company, like, you know, that those were the big influencers of the 70s and 80s, people like that, you know, names you sort of heard in the news, even Trump back in the day. But what they didn't do, to Dan's point, is because of the rise of the because of the rise of the computers. But because of that, those people, Bezos, Gates, Musk, they have outsized. I love that phrase, Dan. They have outsized influence because of the nature of what they influence. Whereas, you know, Lee Iacocca was an influencer in terms of maybe the way cars were manual, you know, all that stuff. But it didn't influence the world the way that Elon Musk is.
Yeah. Let me point out some hypocrisy, too, which I am guilty of. Howard, you on some level, I'm sure. I'm not going to speak for you, and maybe Dan as well. But, you know, we talk about, even in radio, oh, you know, you have to answer to the shareholders, and, you know, the bottom line's got to be better, so the quality of the product goes down because they're trying to save money across the board. Almost on a daily basis, I go and check my portfolio to see what the bottom line is. And when it goes up, what happens? How does it go up? When the TSX goes up, generally.
Mm-hmm.
And how does the TSX go up? A lot of these companies, right?
Of course.
Tighten their belts, they get rid of staff, they improve their bottom line, and Freddie's portfolio gets better. So really, I feel like a hypocrite on so many levels when it comes to that. But again, that's my reality. That's how I had to build my retirement, and you did too. And again, Dan, I don't know your situation, but I know, you know,
yeah,
what I'm saying,
the same thing. Yeah, there's hypocrisy there for sure. But there's I think, to your point, though, there are things you can do. Like maybe the lowest paid worker in the organization, the CEO can only have a multiple of that. There's a certain multiple maximum.
But says who? Like who? Like if Jeff Bezos, who took the chance, who developed this, you know, massive monster known as Amazon, and created jobs, you know, again, there's downside and upside to everything. Dan, you worship at the altar of Kirkland, and Costco has done so much for so many, but it's also squeezed people out of their businesses, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I'm talking about. So there's a yin and yang to everything.
It's crushed Main Street. That's what it's done.
Right. I agree with what you said about portfolio building, but I'm a, you know, I can't sit here and criticize Amazon, because I use Amazon the way you guys use Costco. Like, it's so convenient, especially living where I live. Because I'd say the last couple of years, I've really increased my usage of it because I have learned it's so convenient. Whether I'm buying, like this week, I'm going to order a couple things that'll be there when I get home on Saturday because I know I'm out of stock. Rather than a year, you know, years ago, you'd have to go into a bricks and mortar building. So it's hypocrisy, but we're benefiting from it.
And where you are, you can get stuff the same day, right?
I can get stuff the same day or certainly the next day.
But back to, you know, hypocrisy, and if that's the word in this case, we all have an opinion. We all have ideas, whether global warming or, you know, the price of cocoa or portfolios and what CEOs should make. We all have something to say about it. until we actually have to do something about it. And that's where we all seem to turtle. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, maybe Amazon isn't good for Main Street Canada, but geez, it's pretty convenient. So I'm going to keep, I'd like to see Main Street come back, but you know what? Too much work, or it won't be convenient for me. And I think a lot of global warming and, you know, pollution
absolutely
is that way as well.
And Dan's point about, you know, maybe there should be a cap on what a CEO can make. Mm-hmm. And yeah, in a better world than we're living in, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. But as I said, when you mention it, you know, says who, and who's going to cap that guy? Who's going to tell the CEO of Shopify, who's built that company into billions of dollars of worth, that $200 million for a year is too much money? You know, it's the old thing about... Well, it is.
I'll tell him.
Yeah, I mean, it is until you, you know, you think about this kid that got signed in L.A. last year, who got 700... What was it, Freddie? 700 million for 10 years or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the old,
Ohtani.
You know,
yeah.
It's the old whatever the market will bear. You know, John Rahm, the number three ranked golfer in the world 4 months, 5 months ago, whenever it was, maybe even in the last few months, was given $600 million by the Saudis to go to the cockamamie LIV Golf League. That's absurd, but that's how it is.
Speaking of Ohtani, have you followed that story? That's turning ugly.
No, I haven't.
Have you heard about the betting scandal? Maybe for another time. But anyway, Ohtani had an interpreter who fell $4.5 million in debt to bookies. And earlier last week, Ohtani more or less admitted that he had given him the $4.5 million to pay off this bookie. Well, that's indirectly wagering. And in California, where the Los Angeles Dodgers are, wagering on sports is still illegal, believe it or not. Anyway, now everybody's changed their stories. The Dodgers and Ohtani say this guy stole the money off Ohtani. He didn't give it to him. So now Major League Baseball's got to look into this, because ultimately it could be a Pete Rose thing. And this is their shining star player.
I don't understand, though. If I just lend you the money, I'm not... The bets were already placed. It's... How can that be betting?
There's a paper, they're worried about a paper trail from Ohtani to a bookmaker.
Okay.
Big problem. Again, it's still all got to come out, but and it's so typical of pro sports and hierarchy nowadays. They're all trying to just smooth, "Oh no, hey, don't, you know, nothing going on over here." But there is something there that's got to be investigated.
But just on what what you just said just sounds if, you know, that even if they investigate it would seem that if they could prove that the bets were made and then he paid him his debts.
No, there's a problem with it.
Okay. Well,
you know what I mean? Not to get deeply
into it. No, but I was going to say that is beside the point, but that's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the, just to wrap this up by saying, whatever the value of whatever somebody does has always been driven by what somebody is willing to pay for that.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the system. And sometimes it sucks, but what's the alternative?
Well, there needs to be a throttling of some sort, in my opinion.
How? Who?
Well, there's lots of things that can be done.
You have the throttle. Give the throttle to Dan.
No, Dan's got the throttle. Yeah, it's easy to say. It's easy when you're... Dan, you know what? Dan's got big dick throttle energy.
Hey, Dan, it's like, you know, it's like anything else. It's like, you know, they're talking about a dental program across the country and they're trying and everything. You know, if that had been done at the beginning, it would be a lot more manageable than it is now. And no doubt that things are at a walk now. But the thing is, to try and correct it now, it's just a little bit late. Like, how do you do that? Like,
well, I don't
know.
It's
late to the game.
We've always had teeth. When is late to the game? I mean, what year was the best year? And it's always going to be in the past, right?
When dentistry didn't cost what it did. A family could go to a dentist back in the 40s and 50s or 60s, and, you know, it'd just be a little bit of an expenditure. Well, that...
You know, Dan, I'm sorry, we've got to wrap it up. But my favorite quote so far today is, "We've always had teeth." Thank you, Dan Duran.
All right.
We got to get Dan's news coming up in about 20, 25 minutes after we talk to a fellow doctor, Dr. Alkesh Patel is standing by. But Thank you all for tuning into this program. It really does help because it gives gives us people listening, and people listening gives us sponsors like these fine folks, Freddie.
Yeah, and speaking of your teeth, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Yeah, if you have a small business, go to chamberplan.ca today, get a free quote, and look at the products they offer. Yeah, dental, you know, dental insurance. It's huge for families, and if you have a small business with employees that you value, it'd be great to provide them with this. The Humble and the Fred, we're part of this program, and it's nice to go to the dentist and, you know, not have to worry about it because we're part of this program. You know, it's prescriptions as well, and travel insurance, and therapies, and a mental health component, and HR option. It's all there for small business. It's the great way to go. 32,000 businesses part of this across Canada. They've been around for 40 years. Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, chamberplan.ca.
Had another great conversation yesterday with Mike Kazarian from Lender's Choice. I like the fact that Mike comes on the show. He's always got something. We talked a lot about term versus fixed rate mortgages. Mortgages are becoming, well, they've always been in the news, but the next couple of years, this one and next, apparently it's a record number of Canadians who will have to renegotiate. Get Mike Kazarian from Lender's Choice Mortgages on your side. Independently owned and operated member of the Mortgage Alliance, license 13582. Why do you do it? Well, because it can save you money. It's very important that you at least have a conversation with Mike and the group, because first of all, you don't need to go to your bank. So you can open up your options. They deal with about 75 different lenders. They shop around for you. They find a solution for all your mortgage financing needs. That's not just the rate, but also the term, the best time to do it, etc. Avail yourself of their expertise over 30 years of being in this business to make it worth your while for at least a conversation. How do you do it? Mike, LendersChoiceMortgages.ca. LendersChoice.ca is the website. Mike at LendersChoice.ca is how you get a hold of him directly. And as I've mentioned many times, he's a real good dude and a lot of fun to talk to. You'll have a great conversation with him. And in the end, you'll at least know that you've availed yourself of expertise that can save you money. Now, LendersChoice.ca. For a long time, our next guest was a part of our program. It was exciting to have a doctor on staff, a doctor as a sponsor. And I've kept in touch with Dr. Patel. We've been friends ever since. And sometimes, you know, when I have a difficult case, I'll call in Al Kesh mm-hmm. as a colleague of mine, and he's always there. He's always there with an answer. Welcome back to our program, Dr. Alkesh Patel. Hello, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
Welcome back. Great to see you.
Good to see you as well. After the pandemic, you guys look 10 years younger.
Really? Wow, yeah, we like that.
Yeah, we had a...
You don't look so bad yourself.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because he's 30 years younger than we are. right. Alkesh Patel, I have actually kept in touch with Alkesh over some issues, and he's always been there to help me. Ringside MD Family Health Group in Burlington is what Alkesh operates. And your health, how are you feeling these days?
You know, thankfully I'm in good health, and, you know, keeping active. Got a little 6-year-old and a 1-year-old that keeps me on my toes and my knees.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, We had a conversation earlier in the show. We'd been conversationing. Apparently, I'm having some mental acuity issues.
About new word.
So Freddie and I had been talking about the idea that a lot of Ontarians, people have this perception of the GP and how much money a GP can make, etc. But before we talk about the pledge and all that, give us some of the realities of being a doctor in Ontario in 2024.
That's a heavy, fork to start digging with. Bottom line is in order to even dive into this issue, everyone has to understand that not every family doctor is paid the same.
Mm-hmm.
So when people want to understand what's it like to be a family doctor, first question you have to ask, what's your payment compensation model? How do you get paid? Do you run a business? Are you on salary? Are you in one of these family health teams, family health groups, organizations? Are you in a community health center? And that really begins the journey of, you know, what's it like to be a family doctor? Because your environment dictates sort of, you know, how you operate, what kind of work you do, the kind of services you offer your patients, and the kind of services your patients depend on you for, right? So it's hard to sort of just say, hey, this is what it is in the day in life.
Yeah, okay, but like for Fred mentioned something that I'd heard years ago, which is you guys, you weren't for a while, and correct me, are you able to incorporate now? Because for a while there, you guys weren't allowed to?
No, we've always been able to incorporate ever since the Canada Health Act sort of came into place. And, you know, back in the day when they decided that family doctors were going to start operating clinics as independent businesses, that's when the ability to incorporate came into place. And since that time, unfortunately, the government has systematically defunded the family medicine or the, you know, the family doctor payment scheme. And so that benefit of being able to incorporate became less and less over the years. And I'd say definitely over the last 5 years, there's very little benefit for a doctor, a family doctor anyways, to incorporate because of their income level. Right.
Okay, so that's the issue with the incorporation. And so what is the biggest challenge facing doctors right now? Because right off the top,
yeah,
a doctor, you walk in the room and you have a problem. You want that doctor concentrating on your problem and listening to you. And I'm not saying you, but it was my experience with my last family doctor. I always got the impression that he was preoccupied with some government fight because he used to tell me about them. And what is the biggest problem nowadays for doctors? Bottom line, if you could fix the first thing, what would it be?
For me, I'd fix the money. But yeah, the problem is, it depends on who you ask, right? Because you've got, you know, 25 or 30% of people working in health teams in a different environment. They work in sort of the flagship store that says, hey, everyone should look like Young and Dundas, right? You've got these mom and pop shops that are in smaller communities that are operated by either older family docs or independent family docs. Or you've got these in-between models that you see in Mississauga and Brampton where, you know, there's enough density and you see competition and you see, you know, volume basically that drives and makes some of these clinics successful. But ultimately, what you get down to is you get two different models for family medicine in this province. Either your family doctor has an economic model where he's running a, you know, overcrowded gym membership, or he's running a drive-thru where, as you sort of said, hey, let's get going here. I've got nothing to worry about. Unfortunately, I can deal with one issue today, and let's get you moving.
Well, part of the reason that, and I know because I've been friends with my family doctor since I came to Brampton in 1989, and that's how long we've been. You know, he's been my family, you know, medical advisor. And I know I've seen over the years his I would say his care has not diminished, but he's had to get more people through there in a day to try and continue to make the same amount of money. Could you, if you don't mind, and not to get too personally, what does a GP get per patient visit?
Again, it goes back to, which compensation model does that GP belong to? There can be a 30% pay difference between the top paid.
Give us some of the parameters.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about an average cough and cold visit during cold and flu season. If you look at our benefits sort of compensation model, they'll say, hey, you get $38 a visit to deal with the cough and cold. Now, if a patient comes in with a cough and cold and says, hey, by the way, can you also refill my medications? And by the way, I also need this cream. I've got this rash on my back. And suddenly one issue turns into a few issues and you're still only paid $38 for that one issue, the original issue they came in for. So now having spent time with a patient in your mind thinking, hey, I've you know, trying to do the best that I can, you start thinking, oh, well, you know, what compensation model do I belong in? If I belong to the gym membership model where I've quote unquote registered patients under my name, my goal is to keep you out of my clinic as much as possible because I want to minimize the number of times you come back and see me. So if I can deal with multiple issues in one visit, or if I've got a way to keep you out of the clinic, I'll do so. But in the family health group that I work in, we get paid next to nothing every month to quote unquote register patients, anywhere from $1.40 to say $2.15, and we're expected to bring them back again. So if a patient has a second or third issue, if I deal with all three, I only get $38 plus the $1.15 or $1.45. And then I've got to make ends meet for the rest of the year. So what do I got to do? I got to either bring in more patients, run a walk-in clinic. And that's what's, you know, not the type of medicine or family medicine that family doctors have to practice.
Well, let's be clear with that. So it's $38. If that person comes back the next week, you don't get another $38 if that same person comes back?
If they come back, you do get another $38 if it's for a different issue. Again, they can come back for the same issue, but it goes back to, are they going to actually come back for that one issue? And it depends on what that issue is.
Right.
Wait a second. So if they come
and
back,
how many?
No, I was going to say, if they come back for the same issue, you get paid every time they come back?
In my model, yes.
Okay.
But if you belong to a family health organization, and that's what I was going to say about Fred's doctor, I believe he belongs in a different model. So in that model, it would be in his best interest to try to keep Fred out of his clinic as much as possible.
And mine's called North Peel Family Doctors or something now. He's gone. He retired.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The first time, and you know, there's always another side. There's always another story, because the first time he said to me, one visit, one issue, I was pissed off. Like, because I had been with the guy for over 30 years. Honestly, I was really pissed off. But then, you know, he spent too much time with me telling me about his problems, because I worked in the media and somehow he thought I could help him. So that was a problem. But my point here is there's always another side to the story. You know, you catch people in moments because of the stresses they're under. And this obviously is one with that profession.
Yep. And this all started back in Bob Ray's time, because I remember the transition from the 1980s where you go in to see your family doctor. And he's in this nice office behind his big desk, and you sit outside, you know, in your big cushy chair with your parents, and you have a conversation with them. And then when it's time for your examination, you get walked over to a different room where you get, they examine you. That all left the moment Bob Ray came into power.
Yeah. Right?
And once they started cutting, they never stopped after that. I mean, there were some increases in the early 2000s where, you know, there was a bit of a heyday for family doctors. Mm-hmm. But that quickly stopped, and the Wynn government cut.
So if you're doing the math, just answer two questions. How many patients on average can you see in an hour?
Oh, can I see in an hour? I can see probably 10 an hour.
How many?
10 an hour if I needed to.
So, but on average, would you be comfortable with 6 to 8 patients an hour?
No, on average right now, the way I practice, because I'm also a public health doctor, I see 4 to 5 an hour.
So in your case, so 5 an hour is only making you a couple $100 an hour, which, you know, to the average wage earner sounds a lot, but you're running that $200 an hour, $250 an hour is not just your money. It's cover. I've been to your clinic. You know, we've hung out there. You got a lot of overhead. You've got other people there. I know you have other doctors, but it's not the great amount of money that people would expect you to make or expect that you make. And based on your education and what you provide, expect you to be compensated with.
Exactly. And it's not about sort of like, what do I take home? If you want to talk about that number, I can tell you that over the last 15 years, family doctors have been taking home 39% less gross take-home pay. Right. So if you want to talk about, you know, these aren't numbers. These aren't my numbers. These are the Ontario numbers. Family doctors all across the board taking home 39% less pay to do family medicine. So then the question is, well, what do? You do something that pays the bills, because being a doctor is not cheap. Medical school is not cheap. And all the memberships that come after that are hella expensive. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I my own medical debt was close to $400,000 because I did two different specialties and I did a master's degree.
You know, the days of the Cadillacs and the country clubs are over for doctors. I mean, the old guard, probably, you know, my doctor who retired, I know he left in pretty good shape. So sound the alarm for us. I mean, what's it all about? Where are we going? What do people have to worry about?
Fred, you caught it on, you hit it on the head though, there is that there are haves and have nots, right? And so there's always going to be a spotlight on the doctors, the family doctors that make $1 million. You're going to see them on the sunshine list. There's not going to be a secret. There's going to be a good number of them. But I can tell you that the place that we need to focus our attention on is the half that are quitting.
Well, that was that's one of the reasons you reached out to me is you, the issue that you're tackling is that not only so we've sort of set it up by this is what the reality of being a family doctor in Ontario is, but it's going to and part of the crisis and a lot of people listening have felt it trying to find a family doctor is difficult now. And Al Kesh is here to tell you it's going to get worse in the next 5 years. Why?
Bottom line, we've got 30% pay difference. The government is not interested in really negotiating fairly with doctors. They're more interested in opening new ivory towers, ribbon-cutting ceremonies. And what's happening is we have, our college has sounded the alarm a couple of years back saying 50% of our family doctors plan on quitting in the next 5 years. Okay. And the problem after that is nobody's looked into why. Nobody's dug into how many? What can we do to save them? Nobody's asking those questions. And as a public health doctor, that burns me inside because for me, it's about prevention. It's about saving. And if we can save this problem or fix this problem, why not? So I got tired of watching these obituaries of clinics closing in the news one after the other. And, you know, one night I just said, I'm done with this. The government the most recent announcement. They wanted to spend $3 billion on recruiting 600 family doctors, 600 nurse practitioners, and 3,000 family doctors over 3 years. And I said, that's not the problem. We have more family doctors per capita than ever before in this province. And I'd say at least a third of them don't practice family medicine. And it's not because they don't love the job or they don't love the patients. It's because the job doesn't pay enough to operate a clinic in a respectable manner. And so people are quitting. So I said, I'm done with this. We need to have a petition. We need to shine a light on all the clinics that are closing at once.
Mm-hmm.
What I decided to do is I drafted the Family Doctors Pledge, and I drafted a pledge that says, we as family doctors are committed to Ontario, because becoming a doctor is not an easy journey. It's like trying to become, you know, Sidney Crosby or trying to become an Olympic athlete. There's one goal. You don't waver, you don't quit, you don't, you know, decide one day, hey, you know, maybe there's something easier I can do.
Mm-hmm.
You give her all and you decide, you commit and you succeed. And so we did this not for the cash, but here it is. At the end of the day, we got to feed our families, got to pay our bills, and we got to retire. And what it comes down to is our colleagues are ready to quit, and I'm just done with it. I said, hey, we got to put these people on the line, and we've got to show Ontarians where the vulnerabilities are and where we can potentially save clinics.
Okay.
And that, you know, what bothers me about it is the responsibility that a doctor carries. I mean, you know, most of the show we've talked about structure of compensation and how it works and how it shouldn't work or how it should change. And doctors, day-to-day, the responsibility you carry, the education you have, doctors should be better compensated. They just should. You know, I've often thought, you know, you pay Mitch Marner $10 million a year to, you know, push a hockey puck down the ice, and how much is a brain surgeon at Sick Kids making? You know what I mean? We're way out of whack that way, and I know that's a specialist and all that. But the compensation level, and I think which we've all sort of been exposed to and have had explained to us, including today, it's not adequate for what you guys contribute. It just isn't.
And another way to look at it is it's not just about compensation, it's about the support. Okay, so as doctors, mm-hmm. Yes, money can help move things and lubricate, you know, sort of certain situations. But at the end of the day, we need the right people behind us. And as doctors, we know who we need. We know how to do the job. We need to be able to pay them. We need to be able to support them. Right now, my secretaries, my medical office assistants, make about equal, if not maybe less, than a grocery store clerk.
Yeah.
The Portinos around the corner can better pay my staff than I can. And I've got staff that are trained to be nurses, and I explain to them, like, once you finish your diploma, you're out of here. You're going to get paid 10 to 20 bucks more an hour out there in the real world, which sucks because as a family doctor, my patients need them.
Okay, Alkesh, first comes information, which we've started today, the family doctor's pledge. If people who are listening want to investigate that further, because I just looked at some of the support material that you sent us, and there's all kinds of information. So first comes information, then comes support and understanding. And so we got a couple more minutes, but I want you to, is there a place people can go to find out more information?
Most definitely. So if you go to change.org and you look up the Family Doctor Pledge, right now my goal is to spread the word to as many family doctors, family doctor owned and operated clinics across the province as possible.
So change.org and look up the Family Doctor's Pledge.
Family Doctor's Pledge for Ontario. And I'd like any family doctor who's struggling, who's on the fence, who wants to quit, who has already quit,
right,
to consider coming back, because what we're asking for is 100% support from the Ontario government so that we'll give our 100 back.
Just a couple quick things, because we started at the beginning talking about how, you know, there's lots of stories of people who can't find a family doctor. And what we learned today is there's lots of them, but the fact is 30% aren't practicing GPs anymore, which is why there's a shortage. So do you hope to solve that problem? And second part is, do you have an opinion on private medicine in terms of a family doctor situation?
So the bottom line is that we are hoping to avert the crisis of family doctors quitting, number one, but also bring back the family doctors that have already quit. In order to do that, we need the government to increase funding by 100% to all OHIP fees. We need the government to build clinics for family doctors to work out of. We can't subsidize the leasehold expenses or the lease costs anymore. We need the government to support us with staffing costs so that we can then work without worrying about, was our staff going to quit? Do we have the right staff? Do we have competent staff? We need better support with the infrastructure around the IT. But the bottom line is, for us, where I plan to go next with this is we want to get as many family doctors signed on to this pledge as possible so that we can move forward with renewing the entire compensation model. Because that's what's got to happen next. Going back to what you said, we can't continue in the swamp that we exist in. But in the meantime, we need to stop the bleeding. And the only way to do that is to inject the cash like we did with CERB, with SEBA, with all the other sort of pandemic loans. We're in a pandemic right now of family doctors.
Okay.
You know, and this is a noble strategy, because I imagine a lot of doctors, too, could actually just leave the country and practice somewhere else, too, if they wanted, right? Or is that easier said than done?
Yeah, well, they don't need to. We've got doctors living in Ontario, working abroad remotely, just like the way you and I are trying.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Alkesh, you got my support as an illegal family doctor myself. As you know, I've been practicing under the radar for some time. You weren't with us yesterday, but I've had two, not one, but two medical emergencies, and I intervened here in Mexico because it's Mexico. No one checks my credentials. They just assume that they just assume I'm a doctor. So I do some doctoring here, very, very on the download. So you have my support.
Your community is in good hands, Dr.
Hey, it's been too long, man. We certainly love our chats, and I hope this won't be the last time that we get you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And it's been a long time, so that's why I got a bit passionate at times. But
dude, you were great.
Opportunity, thank you.
We'll talk to our producer, Toronto Mike, and book you in again, because it's always a fascinating conversation and educational. And, you know, what we can do next time is maybe we could have a segment, Ask Dr. Alkesh, and listeners can send in, you know, symptoms that they have, and you and I can troubleshoot that shit.
People have a deal.
What's that?
Maybe we'll have a spin the wheel. Exactly.
Spin the wheel of symptoms. Change.org, look at the Family Doctor's Pledge. Dr. Alkesh, thanks, my friend.
See you, Doc.
Take care.
You know, the political aspect of this, too, amuses me, because, you know, it's, you know, the... flavor of the day, so to speak, people would be attacking the Ford government. And I'm not saying they shouldn't, but did you hear what he said?
Yeah.
This started with an NDP government. Then we had years and years of a liberal government, and now a conservative government, and nothing. It's only got worse through all of them.
Yeah, so, I heard that too.
What's the solution? What's the solution there politically?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I heard when he said that a lot of people would be wasted. And I thought Bob Ray did so much great fucking things for the province.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh yes,
you fucked it up.
Yeah, it really is. And jokes aside about being a doctor, I've had a good relationship with him. We talk. For a while there, you know, obviously he was a sponsor, so I talked to him quite a bit. But I, you know, as you know, I'm fascinated by all things medical. And you know, the mythology of being a family doctor. Or, you know, there are some guys, as he said, they call it, that sunshine list he referred to is they put out, the government puts out a list every year, as you know, but maybe people don't, of the highest paid public employees. But I know my family doctor, Sharif, who I've been friends with for a long time. I know his clinic has gotten, you know, smaller and smaller. He used to have a staff. Now he doesn't. He doesn't have a secretary anymore. He answers his own phone. It's just him.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of care has to have dropped off because he's understaffed.
Well, what I touched on there, too, is do you want your doctor preoccupied with all these issues? Like, it's tough. Just think about that. Like, and we can all relate to that. You know, there are days when we did our morning show where maybe something personally is bothering us. You don't perform at the same level maybe that you would if you didn't have that issue tugging at you. And when it comes to, like, medicine and doctoring, it's like, it's tough, man. They obviously need some help.
Well, hopefully this will be the beginning of some change. We do have some other stuff to get to, Frederick. I know that you're still you've still got some stuff to tell us about, and so do I.
Most definitely, Howard, the retirement Sherpa, Tim Niblett, will be by tomorrow. And again, we've got to tell you, this guy, he's wide open. You know, Tim's a portfolio manager, Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. But listen, yeah, he's open to the idea of having a look at your portfolio. Even if you're with another guy, he'll have a look, a second opinion, give you sort of an idea of whether you're on track in his opinion or whether, you know, you could be doing better. And then once you have that information, well, then it's up to you. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to switch? Are you going to come over to the Sherpa side or stick with your guy? The point is, he will do that for you. And it's very important that you have somebody have a second look at your portfolio. It's just a good thing to do. He's the Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca.
Have him have a second look at this company, Boron One. Maybe your Sherpa. Switch over to our Sherpa, but get somebody to look at this company. You know, we've been talking about the ubiquitous nature of boron. The mineral is in so many things. But lately, the last couple of months, there's been all kind of news about Boron One. And a lot of that news surrounds the getting ready to make a working mine, which is so rare for one of these junior mining companies. It really, really is. And we, you know, we've been educated throughout this process the last couple of years. And for a company to get to where they're at, it's taken years. Like, it takes years and years to get to this level. And that's why it's exciting, because this might be an opportunity for you and your portfolio manager, Tim Niblett, hopefully, to take advantage of it. We make no claims, obviously, about what stock prices may or may not do, but this is one to at least have a look at. Find out more about Boron. Go to the news section of boron1.com and have a look. boron1.com. You know, because I'm doing the show in Mexico and you're in the Dominican, and we're on different time zones, and right now I keep looking up at the, like, for me it's just around 8:15, and in Toronto it's 9:15, but in my brain I keep thinking, oh, it's 8:15, we got lots of show to go, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a lot of show to go. So as soon as Dan is ready, we should get the news on. But before Dan gets here, there's a little story here. I think it's interesting that you were listening around to some different podcasts.
Yes, you know, I like to do that, especially Canadian podcasts, to see the state of the art, so to speak. And yes, that I am scrolling through some of the Canadian podcasts I'm aware of, and our old buddy Dean Blundell, who was at the edge after us for years and years. They were touching on the Zach Hyman story, which is a great story. I mean, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs let him go for nothing. He goes to the Edmonton Oilers and scores his 50th goal the other night.
Of course.
That's all.
That's
all.
Right.
31 years old, he becomes the third oldest player to score 50 goals at 31 years of age. And he's playing with Connor McDavid. I mean, that's part of the story, but still, you got to put the puck in the net. Anyway, another twist to this is that Zach Hyman is Jewish. And he's the first Jewish player ever to score 50 goals in the NHL.
If you told, if I knew nothing else about him other than his name was Zachary Hyman, I would have known he was Jewish, or would have thought at least he was Jew adjacent. But you're telling me he was a Jewish person. So and so I have the clip of the Dean Blundell show. Would you
I was just it reminded me of an old Humble and Fred bit, and I'll get to it this way. They were talking about mixing religion with sport,
right?
And does it really matter, and does that distinction need to be made? The guy's just a hockey player, but he's Jewish, and on and on and on. And Dean went into a little riff, and I thought, where have I heard that before? Anyway, you can play that.
All right, so here's and again, you know, this is many years later, because we'll give you some background on a bit that we did, but here's Dean talking about Zach Hyman.
If you're going to do, like, religious play-by-play, it's Christian to a Christian, over to another Christian, over to an atheist, boom, he scores.
Yeah.
And then you mix in over Christian, oh, over to a Jew. Jew pots it for his 50th.
I did get a chuckle out of that one tweet.
And the Gentile goalie celebrates.
That's cool.
Well, no, and again, it just reminded me of a bit that we did. Oh, when would we have done it? Because Matthew Schneider, I think, was playing with the Leafs at the time, and he had accomplished something as a Jewish player. And we asked that question again so many years ago. It's got to be nearly 30 years.
It was definitely when you hear this clip, Humble and Fred podcast listeners, you're going to hear Fred and I as much younger men. I listened to the entire clip a couple times because I edited some of it, and we're presenting this. Because, you know, kind of, again, nothing against Dean, because it's almost like everything old is new again. And and Dean, you know, Dean thought, much like we did all these years ago, that making the distinction because of a person's religion would make for an odd play-by-play.
Humble and Fred, and last night on the hockey game, pretty bizarre incident.
Yeah, they showed a shot of Matthew Schneider, and Jakes McDonald, the play-by-play guy, goes, Matthew Schneider, one of the very few Jewish players in the NHL.
Nice, Jakes.
And I thought, that's an odd distinction to make, isn't it?
It's kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
And having heard that, Fred and I thought, well, you know, what if play-by-play guys made that distinction for all people of ethnic backgrounds in hockey?
The Jew comes over the blue line and lets one go!
Oh, he's one of a handful of Jews in the league. You know, they don't like pork. But that was a beautiful save by the Catholic goaltender. It's as though he was catching a communion biscuit at a Sunday service.
Okay, the puck goes into the corner. The Hindu has it, but the Muslim steals it. A pass in front of the Sikh. He shoots off the post!
Amazing how the Muslim and Sikh are working together, especially when you consider the Sikh as a kirpan under his Cooper roll.
Play picks up again. The Protestant feeds a pass to the Seventh-day Adventist, drops it back to the Jehovah's Witness. Slap shot, oh, just wide!
Ooh, action is getting intense here. The Jehovah's Witness has been knocking on the door all night.
The Mooney, he dishes the puck off to the Hare Krishna, over to the Branch Davidian, back to the Mooney, Hare Krishna, Branch Davidian, Mooney, Krishna, Mooney, Krishna, Mooney, Krishna, scores!
I'll tell you, that Branch Davidian is really setting this league on fire. Just a reminder to our viewers, coming up in our second intermission, a priest, a minister, and a rabbi, and of course, Pope's Corner.
There you have it. So, oh yeah, hey, listen to this.
Happy, happy.
You know, I'm before we comment on it, one of the reasons I left this at the end, because it's our friend Norm. And I, you know what, of all the Humble and Fred IDs, this was one of my favorites.
He's slappy, happy, wappy, F for Freddy. He's fruity, tooty, wacky, Humble and Freddy, there with you and your Betty. Hey, name of
for bullets is all that. That was a guy named Norm Spencer, and all three of us knew him. But I would just say that I just one of those people that I don't think I can remember anybody in the last 30 or 40 years that consistently made me laugh every time I was around him. Just a really funny, funny guy.
Yes.
Freaking Norm. I took him to the National, where I used to be a member. It's one of the most exclusive golf clubs in the world. And Norm shows up wearing cut-off jean shorts. And because he was a big golf fan. And he shows up, and first of all, I laughed my fucking head off. And I said, Norm, you can't. Yeah. You can't wear jean shorts here. We need to get you some shorts.
Fuck, he was funny, man.
Yeah. He was one of the big voice guys in the day, right?
Oh, yeah.
When we all used to go to auditions back when you used to go to auditions rather than doing it from your own studio.
Yes.
And I remember him always pulling up, and he had a cabriolet or something with a... you know, one of those convertibles.
Yes.
But the convertible part didn't work, so he always drove it around with the top down. It was like, man, are you, what about your brains?
It's hard to describe the kind of funny he was, because he was so dry and just a great guy. And he passed away not that long ago. I'm going to say in the last 10 years, right?
Yep. Poor fella, he had some demons.
Oh, and, my God, yes.
And, yeah. You know, when I hear that stuff, it just warms my heart, gives me that fuzzy feeling, just the fun times we... And I know everybody, every radio station, people had fun, but I'm only speaking for us and that place, the fun we had. Because anything, you know, it was like anything goes. Somebody would have an idea, and it was into the booth, and bang, there it was. It was
And that's that was just one fantastic. Of hundreds of bits we did like that.
Yeah. Yes, siree.
Anyway, we've got to get things wrapped up, Dan, because we've got a grown-up meeting in a few minutes' time. All we're going to say
is
you
want to skip the news then?
No. We've got a couple minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Pre-birthday. we're just going to give you a little hint, Humble and Fred people. But Humble and Fred have got something in the works that's kind of like a retro return to something we did a long time ago. It's kind of like a Humble and Fred do-over, and hopefully this time we don't fuck it up. And by we, I mean me. So, but it's going to be something fun for the summer of 2024 for the Humble and Fred people. Freddie, I want to, I know you, before you do your version of this, let me do mine, okay?
Feeling stuck on the sidelines?
Hey, watch where you're walking, man.
When life gives you too much to tackle?
Yeah, I'm going to need that draft tomorrow.
You know it's time to play. It's easy to find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Get the latest sports odds and free tips to help you go all the way this football season. Visit Bodog.net today. Hashtag make a play.
Yeah, you got to tell us a little Bodog story as well. Don't you still have that to do?
Yeah, whether you're you know, a poker player, a sports bettor, Bodog is your destination. Since 1994, they've been providing Canadians with a unique form of wagering. And Bodog, a fine sponsor of the Humble and Fred show, and we encourage you to go to Bodog today to bet on any sport or any form
of gambling entertainment that you enjoy. Bodog.
Very well said.
No.
Here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man. His voice is nice and low.
Ho!
Dan Duran, the anchorman, comes and asks for credentials. He has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care. And his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from Lisa's place. Here he is, soon to be 80 years old. Just one more day before this fellow says so long to the 70s. Hello to the hello to the Ochentas. Here he is, movie and television anchorman, Dan Duran.
Popes and yaks, there's a lot more going on than you think on the desolate slopes of Mount Everest. Now, you may have this image of a few tents and Sherpas, but hey, look at the pics of base camp. Just check it out. It's massive, all the colors of different tents from all over the world. And all the people there on the mountain, well, shit happens. For example, just a couple of days ago, a woman got gored by a yak while live streaming to her family. There's more to it than that, but, you know, she got gored by a yak, for crying out loud.
Mm. Yeah, that's something. That doesn't happen that doesn't happen every day, by the way.
No, it's like, how'd your trip go to Mount Everest? Well, I got gored by a yak. There's that.
Is that video out there? I'd love to see it.
Nothing upsets your summit attempt than being yak gored.
Exactly. Well, now, that's not the only shit that's happening there. Mm. Nepal has implemented a new shit rule. Whatever shit you shit out on the mountain must be carried out. Why? Because, well, if you shit on a mountain like Mount Everest, it freezes and the poop just sits there forever. Or at least until global warming greens up the peak. But it's there, which is like kind of gross. Imagine summiting and you look around at the you know, the view and the clouds and everything else, proud of yourself for getting to that point, and then there's a bunch of crap around the flag that you're about to plant in the mountain.
So how do the authorities in Nepal, I mean, is it something where they, when you come back down, they check, they say, hey, we need to see your shit? We need to shit count.
I guess that I don't know how the how they're implementing this shit rule, but it would make sense to me that you know you pack in, you bring your shit out.
Yeah.
I mean that's a hiker
shit in,
rule.
Shit out, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of environmentalists. Like if you're going into pristine wilderness, you're supposed to not, you know, you're supposed to bring your stuff out. Whatever you take in, you take
what
out.
What if you're up there and you have a bad tummy and you have the runs?
Well, I don't, you know, it's biodegradable and frozen. I don't see the problem, but I guess.
Yeah, and by the way, the yaks, they're not fucking bagging up their shit. They're just shitting everywhere, darn.
Well, there's a problem. You know, the yaks are probably eating, you know, how dogs like shit. Well, you know.
Maybe, yes.
Yeah, Dan, I think.
The yaks.
That, another example of, you might have thought this through before you were going to. You might have just fucking taken some, a second opinion.
My son's dog, Dougie, not the Dougie I'm staying with, my son's dog, Dougie, has this fascination, loves to eat cat shit. So it'll go to my daughter's place and he'll run right in and go right to the cat litter.
Ooh.
And he attacks it like it's a delicacy. He attacks it like I attack Dominican food.
That's right. To dog cat shit is the cabaret food jewel of the Caribbean. When Stan's first couple of years of existence, many years ago, my sweet little boy Stan, the dog, ate his own shit. I'd never seen a dog do it. Like, and it was like, it was. I almost wanted to take him somewhere because apparently that's a Boston Terrier thing too. That they love their own shit. Very good reporting, Dan Duran, tomorrow on the program. Very excited to celebrate the birth of Dan Duran, who was born on the date tomorrow in 1932. Or something. I haven't done the math. 1934.
Obviously. Yeah, somewhere in there. Just before the First World War.
That's right. Dan came back. Yeah, yeah. It was the Roaring Twenties, and Dan was a DJ at a speakeasy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Dan Duran's Speakeasy. Also on the morning program, also on the show tomorrow, we're excited to welcome back Cash Cab Round 2 with Adam Groh, who was a big part of our program back in 2011 when we started. And it's been too long since we've had him back. And we'll see you all tomorrow. Dan Duran, everybody.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. For contests and comments, we read all of our emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com, sometimes out loud on this pod, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. Something else you can do is subscribe, get your friends to subscribe, get your parents to subscribe, get, you know, your small daughter to subscribe. You know, subscribing part helps us out. Anyway, for Humble and Fred, from the Insert Your Name Here Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, if you summit, take your shit with you and enjoy every goddamn day. Jobs and jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone. Bottles and cans, just clap your hands, just clap your hands. Where's that?